Alright guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host Aaron Freeman, and today we're talking about the Falcons' two newest free agents in Luke Stocker and Kenyon Barner.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years at FalcFans.com, on Twitter, at FalcFans, and, of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about two new additions to the Falcons roster. I was a little surprised to see the Falcons would add two more guys this quickly. I thought maybe that would be a Monday show, potentially, if they added some guys over the weekend, but they added Luke Stocker, the tight end, formerly of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Tennessee Titans, Kenyon Barner, the running back slash return specialist, formerly of the Patriots, Panthers, and Eagles. I think he also had a cup of coffee with the Chargers as well at some point in time. And also on today's episode, we will be talking a little bit about Tevin Coleman again. Talked upon a little bit of him leaving for San Francisco on yesterday's episode, but I want to touch upon a little bit more of that today because we found out the details of his contract. And I think that adds maybe a little bit more to the story that we could touch upon a little bit with Tevin Coleman and his departure in Atlanta. Let's talk about Luke Stocker. Let's jump into it and talk about Luke Stocker. We don't know the terms of his contract. It's a two-year deal, though. One hopes that the Falcons then follow suit of what other teams have done this offseason. We're paying $6 million a year for basically backup tight ends and blocking tight ends. You know, I think probably the ceiling, if we're guesstimating on what this is, we saw Demetrius Harris and Dwayne Allen sign two-year deals as backup slash blocking tight ends. Those were worth about $6 million. Both of those guys got about $3.25 million guaranteed in those deals over the first year of that contract. So I think that's probably the upper end of the Stocker deal. That would certainly be a significant raise to what Stocker has made over the course of his, what, like 8 years in the NFL. He was part of that 2011 draft way back in the day. So, you know, typically Stocker has played for the veteran minimum or, you know, slightly more than that, maybe $1 million plus. So, you know, that's probably the low end of the deal. But given that he's, you know, typically you don't see guys at this point in free agency signing for veteran minimum type of deals, unless it's with the team that they're re-signing with because it's the best offer. So, you know, on the second day officially of free agency kicking off, I would assume that Stocker got a little bit more than basically like a two-year, you know, $3 million deal or something like that. But probably something $3 to $6 million, somewhere in that range for Stocker. And obviously the lower, the better. You know, I'm a cheapskate, so I like it when the Falcons are being cheap, when they're getting quality players for cheap. And I think Stocker is a quality player. I've always been impressed with his blocking. I was very high on him when he was coming out of Tennessee 8 years ago, but he never really quite lived up to his potential as a receiver. He's coming off kind of a career year as far as his receiving goes in 2018 under Matt LaFleur and with the Titans. He had 15 catches for 165 yards and two touchdowns. His previous career highs in those categories came all in the 2012 season where he had 16 catches for 165 yards and one touchdown. So, you know, he was able to basically match the best season of his career this past season in Tennessee. Obviously, he played under Dirk Koetter in Tampa Bay for two and a half seasons from 2015. He got cut towards the end of 2017, got scooped up by the Titans, where Mike Mularkey, now currently the Falcons tight ends coach, was the head coach, finished out that season and continued to play with Tennessee this past year. The biggest knock on Stocker really at this point isn't his skill. It's really durability. He hasn't really had the greatest record of being durable. The last 2 years he's been probably at least from a, you know, when you look at how often he's on the injury report, has probably appeared on the injury report the least over the last 2 years in Tennessee. You know, maybe that speaks to Tennessee's, you know, strength and conditioning program maybe. But was constantly sort of nicked up, missing a couple of games here or there throughout his time in Tampa Bay. over the years with hip and back and calf injuries and various other things. So we'll see what role he has. Right now, I think it's obvious to sort of pencil him as a second tight end, replacing Logan Paulson behind Austin Hooper and primarily being that blocking tight end. That very well easily could be his role. But I do think it's interesting that when you look throughout Luke Stocker's career, for the most part, he's been more of a third tight end on a team that uses a lot of 12 and 13 personnel, which is what he was in Tennessee. He was the third tight end this past year, but got sort of bumped up because Delanie Walker got hurt in week one and then sort of played behind Jonnu Smith as the second tight end in 2018. But you go back to his last couple of years in Tampa Bay when he was behind guys like Cameron Brate and Brandon Myers and Austin Seferian Jenkins and O.J. Howard. He was more of a third tight end that was purely out there on the field as a blocker than necessarily a guy that you can sort of pencil in for that second tight end spot. So what that means to me, at least, is I think it does kind of still leave the door open for the Falcons to still potentially address the tight end position in the draft. But I think the value of Stocker is that if the Falcons don't get the tight end that they want, isn't there available to them whenever they decide to take a tight end, Stocker is more than capable of stepping in and being that number two guy and if push comes to shove. But I think, the door's still open for the Falcons to take a tight end, maybe an H-back, similar to what Dirk Cutter did in 2016 when they drafted Alan Cross to be sort of their H-back, fullback type of guy. Again, Dirk Cutter, likes to use two tight end sets. Maybe the Falcons will go back to using more 13 personnel as part of their hashtag, physical movement. And if that's the case, as we saw under Kyle Shanahan, particularly in 2016, if you're going to use three tight end sets quite extensively, which the Falcons didn't use that much under Steve Sarkisian, carrying four tight ends makes a lot of sense because you want to have, that extra body on your roster. So right now we have three with Stocker, Saubert, and Hooper. So I do think if that's the Falcons' plan, and I don't know if it is, but I'm saying I do think there's still a possibility that the Falcons could wind up drafting a tight end as well. But obviously, they don't need to basically reach on a guy in the draft. And that's kind of the value of free agency, where it's like you go out there, you fill roster spots, and so you can go into the draft and not need a player and then wind up doing what the Falcons have done too many times over the years, which is basically reach on a guy a round or two too early because you didn't go out there and fill that spot in free agency, and now you're quote unquote desperate to fill that spot by the time we reach April. So I think this is a solid signing. Obviously, we'll wait and see what the price tag is, but again, presuming that it's a 2-year deal in that $3 to $6 million range, that makes sense to me. And the lower it is on that spectrum, obviously, the more favorable I'm going to be. As I said, I'm a cheapskate, so the cheaper these deals, the less money the Falcons are spending, the better. And we'll come back and talk about Kenyon Barner in just a moment, but I do want to let you guys know that even though this week is coming to an end, Matt Williamson has you guys covered for all the latest news from around the league dealing with the free agent frenzy on the Locked On NFL podcast. Find that podcast on whatever platform you listen to your Locked On podcast, your team every day. So Kenyon Barner, one of those guys that many of you guys that watch college football probably remember from his days in Oregon. He was part of that Chip Kelly Oregon pipeline where, with LaMichael James and LeGarrette Blount, Jeremiah Johnson in those years. I remember Barner not being as in love with Barner coming out of school as I was with guys like James and Johnson, et cetera. He's kicked around the league. He's bounced around. He was originally drafted by the Panthers, got traded by them the following year when Chip Kelly came to Philadelphia to the Eagles, spent several years in Philadelphia, was scooped up by the Patriots this past year. And then wound up finishing with the Panthers. You guys probably remember Kenyon Barner even more vividly from him getting absolutely wrecked by Matt Bosher on a kickoff return this past year in that Week 16 game. And he's had some other notable games against the Falcons where he had some, particularly with the Eagles, where he was productive. So I imagine you know, the Falcons looked at him and say, okay, this guy's performed numerous times in games against us. He's a talented special teamer. He's a talented return specialist. Although, you know, I'm sure many of you, particularly the people that hate Keith Armstrong, would argue, well, you know, he was going against crappy special teams units here in Atlanta. And so, you know, you got to grade these things on a curve. And maybe the Falcons are a little too enamored with a guy who dominated their bad special teams units. But, you know, Ben Cadaqua, coaching the Redskins, obviously probably saw a lot of Barner when he was in Philadelphia. So that may be another reason that, you know, he was been attracted to him by from afar during his days in Washington. And so therefore wanted to bring him here. You know, as for Barner's abilities on offense, you know, I guess, as I said, I wasn't too high on him coming out. He hasn't really done anything in the league to really sort of make that opinion of him feel like I was off the mark on that. You look at his career touches over the course of five seasons played in 54 games over those five seasons. He's touched the ball a total of 118 times on offense, counting his rushing attempts and his receptions. For the sake of comparison, over 14 games this past season, Ito Smith touched the ball 170. So clearly NFL teams haven't really made it that much of an effort to get him involved on offense, either as a receiver or a running back. So I don't think he's really going to move the needle as far as a running back position goes. But I do think it probably potentially eliminates the possibility that the Falcons draft a running back. Sort of my thought process all along is if the Falcons were going to draft a running back, it would be a guy that has return skills, because with Devontae Freeman, with Ito Smith, with Brian Hill, the best way for that guy to distinguish himself in that running back room is to offer some premium value on special teams. But now with Barner, I feel like that's off the table. And then thus the Falcons, if they're going to draft a running back, they're going to draft a guy presumably purely off of his running skills. And, you know, I know some people feel like don't have high opinions, particularly of Devontae Freeman or the Falcons running back depth. But like you look at a guy like Brian Hill, who I know a lot of people aren't necessarily counting as a lock to make the roster. And he's not. He's certainly not a lock to make the roster. But he was a fifth round pick. He's been productive when he's gotten opportunities, whether that was in Atlanta and in Cincinnati, limited opportunities. But, you know, when he was coming out, myself and many other people saw him more as a fourth round talent. So for me, at least, if you're going to use another day three pick on a running on a backup running back, I don't feel like he's going to bring anything to the table that Smith, Ito Smith and Brian Hill already don't bring as far as overall talent. So if you're going to draft a running back, to me, what that says to you, if you're going to get a guy that's going to definitely come in and win a roster spot, he's got to be significantly more talented than those guys. And so that means you're really looking at a guy that has, you know, that early round talent that, you know, whether he slides late in the draft or you pull the trigger on a guy on the second day of the draft. I don't necessarily know how realistic that is for the Falcons. You know, I never would put it past the Falcons, you know, again, hashtag physical, for them to add a running back with that mantra. But given their other needs along the offensive line, you know, or at least, and I know some people think, oh, well, they've addressed their needs on the offensive line. That's very debatable. But like, if you're asking me, and I'm sure other people have differing opinions, but if you're asking me, and we're looking at day two draft picks, and you're asking me, would I rather have a talented young running back or a talented young offensive lineman or a talented young defensive lineman or cornerback or wide receiver? I'm not choosing a running back over any of those four positions. I mean, I wouldn't choose a running back over a talented young tight end either. So for me, at least, like, those are, you know, O-line, D-line, cornerback, wide receiver, to me, are premium positions. And as I've explained a number of times, I feel like you can get quality running backs off the street in undrafted free agency. It's not that big a deal. It's not that pressing a need. But, you know, Barner's, that being said, Barner's primary value is going to be on special teams as a return specialist. You know, when you look at some of his career kickoff numbers, it's roughly about the same of what Marvin Hall has done. You know, I posted this on Twitter, but, you know, Marvin Hall had 26 kickoff returns in 2018. If you look at Kenyon Barner's last 26 returns, and those goes date back all the way to 2016 over the last three seasons or two plus seasons. His numbers are pretty much identical as far as kickoff returns. You know, Barner has 13 more yards, which again, over 26 returns works out to be about half a yard better per return. So in that way, I feel like it's more of a lateral move as far as upgrading the kickoff return spot over a guy like Marvin Hall. You know, Barner does have experience returning punts. It's not as if Hall didn't have experience returning punts. The Falcons just chose not to let him return punts, if you ask me. But, you know, the one season where Barner did serve in that punt return capacity as a full-time guy was 2017 in Philadelphia. And he was decent when you look at, you know, some of the stats, at least at surface value. He averaged about 8.9 yards per attempt, which is about above average. Roughly average is about 8.5 in the league. So, you know, that's slightly above average. But then when you take a little bit of a deeper look below the surface, maybe that number is a little bit inflated by a big 76-yard return that he had that year against the Cardinals. I know Atlanta Falcons Twitter page posted a highlight of it on their Twitter page. And so if you take that away, you know, if you just remove that and say, okay, that yards per return is skewed by that huge number, his average per punt return drops to 6.3 yards on 26 returns. And, you know, for the sake of comparison, if you took away Justin Hardy's longest punt return last year, which was only 18 yards, he would have been averaging about 6.8 yards on 19 returns. So, you know, it's questionable that, you know, outside of one return, maybe Kenyon Barner is only roughly about as good a return specialist. At least the larger body of work suggests that he's roughly, arguably worse than what Justin Hardy was this past season. The other thing that stands out about Barner as far as his punt returns go is that he's muffed 4 of his last 34 punt returns. So ball security is a concern. You know, for the sake of comparison, I think the Falcons have had like only like 3 muffed punts in the last like 6 seasons. So, but part of that is due to the fact that like Eric Weems, I don't think ever muffed a punt throughout his entire Falcon career. So that is maybe a potential drawback as well. You know, maybe a little bit of a trade-off if Barner has that explosive potential, which obviously if you can return a punt 76 yards, there was like 0.0% chance that Justin Hardy was ever going to take a punt 76 yards. So from that perspective, at least even if it's only represents like, you know, 1% of his punt returns, that's, you know, 0 to 1 is an improvement. So you can't take that away. But, you know, but what I will say, and obviously you guys know, I was a big Marvin Hall fan, so I may be a little bit biased on here. But, you know, for me, at least when you look at sort of the contract, it's a 1-year deal. We don't know the exact terms again, but even if it was for a veteran minimum deal, you're not saving any money from what you would have had from keeping Marvin Hall. And in fact, again, as I said, with the Luke Stocker conversation, given that Barner signed this early in the free agency, it's likely that he got something of a signing bonus, even though it's probably a small signing bonus. So the chances that he's making more money than what you would have been able to pay Marvin Hall is likely, but it's probably not a significantly higher number. You know, the only way that Barner makes the team is basically as a kickoff or punt returner, again, because his skills on offense are limited. He's not really an experienced cover guy. He's not going to be your personal protector or anything like that. So, you know, this to me feels like another Andre Roberts signing, but at least with Andre Roberts, who has spent several years as a starter in the NFL, at least, you know, even though the Falcons refused to use Andre Roberts on offense, but at least with Andre Roberts, you knew he could contribute something on offense. I don't know if you can say that about Barner. You know, again, that may be my Marvin Hall bias. So basically, you know, I felt like Marvin Hall should have been the guy, the kickoff punt returner that the Falcons should at least have as a body in camp to compete with whoever they bring in potentially via the draft. You know, and again, they could still draft a wide receiver that has return skills. Again, I don't think a running back with return skill is probably off the table, but they could still draft a wide receiver with return skills. You know, but it just feels like to me, if that guy comes in and beats out Barner for a roster spot, like, what did you gain by swapping out Marvin Hall for Kenyon Barner? You're taking a less impactful offensive player for a marginally better special teams player. So we'll see. Again, based off of Barner's body of work, it suggests that he's mostly a lateral move as far as the Falcons are concerned in the return game. But again, he could definitely come out. No one knows what's going to happen. He could definitely come out and have a great season and win the job and, you know, take his first punt to the house or his first kickoff to the house. And, you know, everything I just said just flutters away. You know, I guess for me, you know, we'll end it here. But the only real positive I could take away from this move is that it increases the chances that the Falcons, and when they look for a wide receiver in the draft, it's not going to be a guy that's a return specialist. It's actually going to be a guy that can actually contribute on offense, which if you've been a long time listener to this podcast, you know, is a big beef of mine that the Falcons don't develop wide receivers. And when they do draft them, they don't develop those guys. I'm looking at you, Justin Hardy and Laurent Robinson. So, you know, at least I can still cross my fingers that the Falcons might actually draft a wide receiver and then actually might develop him. So there's my, that's the most positive spin I can put on this, that Barner opens the door for the Falcons to actually get a legit young, talented wide receiver that can do some stuff on offense in the future. So there you have it. We'll come back and wrap things up by talking about Tevin Coleman's contract in just a moment. But I do want to let you guys know about the NBA side of the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can find a daily podcast devoted to all 30 NBA teams, including the Locked On Hawks podcast with host Brad Rowland. Find that wherever you get your Locked On podcasts, your team every day. All right, so we got the terms of Tevin Coleman's contract, and it doesn't look good, at least in the sense from the Falcons' perspective, because, you know, one of the concerns we had and one of the reasons we're like, oh, yeah, Tevin Coleman's walking. He's going to get paid. He's going to get this big payday. And, you know, the initial reports were that he was signed a two-year, $10 million deal, which seemed very modest, as I mentioned on yesterday's episode. Now the sort of more details have come out, and it's really a two-year, $8.5 million deal. And really, when you break it down, it's a one-year, $3.6 million deal. He didn't get a signing bonus. You know, there's some type of guaranteed kick-in, presumably like an option bonus or a roster bonus, due next April. Not this April, next April, which, you know, the 49ers can basically get out of the contract if they don't pay that or whatever the case may be before then. And the additional money is basically like $2 million in incentives, which is where the 2 years, 10 comes from. And so, like, for me looking at this contract, I'm like, really? You know, either I was very wrong on Tevin Coleman's market, which, of course, you know, I'm never wrong on anything. So clearly that's the least likely outcome. Or I just think it shows that, you know, the fact that he took this sort of modest contract, which is basically a one-year, $3.6 million deal, suggests that, you know, maybe Tevin Coleman wanted out and wanted to be in a place where he could prove himself. Because I it's hard for me to imagine that this was the best offer that he got from anybody out there in the league. And certainly, I feel like either the Falcons didn't offer him anything or he just rejected their offer. Because I got to imagine they offered him, you know, something little, maybe not like massively higher than this, but like probably like 3 or 4 years worth, you know, $12, $15 million. And probably would have gotten more money up front in terms of guaranteed money than what he got from the 49ers. So it at least makes me think that, you know, Coleman wanted an opportunity to go elsewhere, to prove himself, basically play on a one-year prove-it deal. He'll hit the offseason next year, potentially, still at age 26. You know, you're probably wondering why he would choose San Francisco over Atlanta, besides the obvious reasons. He's basically going to be competing for reps with same in Atlanta as he would in San Francisco, with a running back coming off a knee injury, Devontae Freeman in Atlanta, and obviously Jared McKinnon coming off a ACL tear with the 49ers missing all of last season. I think the difference is that San Francisco has no history with McKinnon. They paid him a lot of money last offseason. He never played really a down for them because I think he got hurt like the first week of training camp. There's no loyalty there right now. There is loyalty in Atlanta with Devontae Freeman. Dan Quinn has loyalty. Dirk Cutter was part of the staff that drafted Devontae. So if Devontae's healthy, he's going to get snaps. I don't think that's – Jerick McKinnon is not guaranteed to get snaps over Tevin Coleman if he's healthy. So I think there's a better opportunity for Tevin Coleman to get more touches there. And obviously, you know, Tevin Coleman's now would have to be working with his third offensive coordinator, hasn't had a illustrious history with offensive coordinators that have maximized his potential with Sarkisian, probably looks at what, you know, Dirk Cutter or at least the Bucks with Todd Monken didn't necessarily maximize their running backs in Tampa Bay. Ronald Jones was basically a non-factor for them. So I could certainly understand why Tevin Coleman, and then going back to what he was able to accomplish under Kyle Shanahan in 2016, particularly in the passing game, I could certainly understand why Tevin Coleman would be like, you know what, if I'm not going to get this monster contract from somebody, I'd rather go to a place where, you know, I know I can get the most value, or a place that can get the most value out of me. So, yeah, you know, I think that's sort of my takeaway from looking at these contract details. So, you know, again, we'll probably talk more about Tevin Coleman in depth, and sort of summarize his career in Atlanta more thoroughly when things start to slow down in probably the coming days next week. I think I wish him the best. Again, I really do. I was a big fan of Tevin Coleman. You know, probably not as big as some other people out there that were constantly saying Tevin Coleman's like the best running back in the league and the Falcons should get rid of Devontae and blah, blah, blah. You know, I love both of the Falcons running backs, and I wish the Falcons could have retained both of those guys in perpetuity. So that's where we're going to leave it. I know, you know, this is another episode that isn't necessarily praising of the Falcons free agent moves. And before anybody is too burned out by the quote unquote negativity, I think the reality is, and this has been something that I've been expecting for a while, but I don't think this offseason is going to be an offseason of where the Falcons get a lot of wins. In if you think of it that way, like whether it's the cuts they've made, whether it's the signings they've made, we'll see what the draft holds. But it just doesn't seem like this is an offseason. You know, the Grady Jarrett deal not getting done before the franchise tag hits. I just don't think this offseason is really set up for the Falcons to sort of come out and come away really, you know, nailing it in a lot of ways. But I don't think anybody should interpret that to mean that, well, the Falcons are going to lose the season. Just because we're, you know, I can only speak for myself, but I'm sure I'm speaking for many of you guys out there. Just because the Falcons are not really hitting home runs in March doesn't mean they're not going to hit home runs in September. The season is won and lost in September through January, not in March. So I think people need to keep that in mind. So even though, you know, they're listening to this podcast, and I'm sure the people that it really bothers probably tuned out by now, but if you're listening to this podcast, you're like, man, Aaron's being so critical of these moves. It's just, you know, I'm trying not to be overly critical. I'm just like questioning them a little bit. You know, they're fine. They're just meh, mostly. It's like, I don't like this cut. These free agent signings are meh. You know, we'll see what else the Falcons do. But I still feel, even though I'm like whatever with some of these offseason moves and down on other ones, I still feel like this team is on pace to win 10-plus games this year. And nothing they have done so far, to me, has really moved the needle forward in that regard. But again, I don't think that was that realistic, nor do I think anything has really sort of hindered them in that regard. So keep that in mind when you hear me being critical of moves, or when you hear other people being critical of moves, or when you are being critical of moves. Understand that, you know, you don't win a season in March. You know, everybody's enamored by what the Browns have done, but like I sit here and I'm like, do we know if Freddie Kitchens is a good head coach? We know he's a good offensive coordinator, but do we know if he can handle like the history of promoting the offensive coordinator to be the head coach, you know, after he was an interim guy or whatever? I'm imagining there's not a rich history. Maybe I'm too, you know, recency biased with Dirk Cutter, but I can't recall too many instances where that's worked out. Ben McAdoo comes to mind. Raheem Morris comes to mind. Look, nothing against Freddie Kitchens. I'm just sitting here saying, like, you know, everybody's like, oh, the Browns are going to, you know, it's going to be Browns versus Patriots, AFC Championship, book it. Maybe it is. But at the same time, I am also looking at that and like, I don't know about that. So we'll see. So just keep that in mind as you're, you know, banging your head into the wall with some of these Falcons moves and whatnot. And I'll try to keep that in mind myself as well with some of my expressed negativity on this podcast. So there you have it, guys. We'll be back Monday to talk about whatever happens over the weekend. I'll come up with something. If you guys send in your questions on Twitter at Lockdown Falcons, on Facebook, Lockdown Falcons, email address, LockdownFalcons at mail.com. We can possibly do a Q&A as well Monday, or, you know, later in the week. So definitely get those questions in. And until then.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.